Am I kind of live? Hey, there we go. Good afternoon, guys. You're still awake. Last session of Monday. The coveted last session of the day. How's everyone's techie been so far today? Good? Yeah? Did you like the keynote? Mostly? Parts of it? The first part, perhaps? All right. So this is PCIT B313, Hybrid Identity. My name is Adam Hall. I sit inside the business group at Microsoft Corp. I'm the product manager for all of Hybrid Identity. So my team looks after everything to do with Active Directory, ADFS, the sync and federation capabilities that connect everything on-prem up to the cloud from an identity point of view, Azure Active Directory, Azure RMS, those kinds of things. So this is a session where I'm going to go through broad left to right view of hybrid identity, how we connect on-premises Active Directory up to the cloud, how we do identity on-premises with things like Identity Manager, which has been rebranded from Forefront just to the Microsoft brand. The rules around the Microsoft brand are you only use Microsoft in legal terms. So basically, you'll see us refer to it as just Identity Manager. We'll be talking about that Wednesday, with Mark Wall. We're going to do an Identity Manager vNext session and talk a lot about what's coming in vNext and so on. So if you're interested in on-premises Active Directory Identity Manager kind of stuff, that'll be the session to be at. So hybrid identity sits inside a part of our organization called the Enterprise Mobility Team or People-Centric IT. We have four solutions that are part of that group, just to set context. Unified or mobile device management and application management is where the Intune config kind of stuff sits. We have desktop virtualization, which so far has been Windows Server remote desktop services, although as you've seen today, we now have Azure Remote App come into that team as well. We have hybrid identity, which is what we're talking about today, and a very closely related solution to hybrid identity is access and information protection, where things like the web application proxy, rights management, work folders, that kind of stuff sits, all about people getting access to stuff. So those two things are very closely related. The whole kind of, if I could boil this entire session down to one sentence, it would be this one, which is, we are all facing the challenges of granting people access to information, but maintaining control. Right? How do we give people access to things, but make sure that we're okay? What happens when they use SaaS applications and data and so on just drifts out into the internet and you've lost control? How do you manage identity when you've got multiple systems and multiple things going on and bridging on-premises and cloud together? All of these things boil down to people wanting stuff to get their job done. And as IT, we're tasked with saying, hey, that's great, but, and having compliance and regulatory compliance and auditing and security and stuff of we're the bad guys who try and stop them doing things and they're the good guys who just want stuff. And how do those two things intersect? And that's really what this entire session boils down to. What we want is for users, devices, apps, and data to be nice, insular kind of things. And in the past, they were. We could deal with users, we could deal with the devices they used because they were just PCs or back in the mainframe days, just a green screen, and we had that under control. They accessed a known set of applications because they had no access to anything else, and all the data was nicely tucked away on file servers and SharePoint servers and various other storage mechanisms, and we knew exactly where it was at any one time. We could lock down access and we were in control. Yeah, it's not so much anymore. Right. The reality is that users are using devices that we know nothing about. They're accessing applications and storing data in locations we know nothing about. And they're putting data onto devices we have no control over. That's the problem that we face. And that is what we are trying to tackle with all of this technology and all the solutions that we're bringing to market to help you combat this and do it in a way that's positive and that users go, yeah, that's okay. I'm willing to do that because I get stuff. Yes, but. Okay, and it's taking them along for that ride. So we're going to talk about this in terms of three things: unification, enablement, and protection. And so there's three sections to this in this presentation. I have some demos I want to show you along the way. If you have questions, please raise your hand. If you're close to the front and I can hear you, yell. If you can't, please jump up to a microphone. I will repeat the question so that everyone in the room knows. But if you have questions, please, I'm happy to take them on the way through. So hybrid identity, let's boil this down to those three things. Unification, what are we talking about here? Creation on premises of a central identity. So if you've got Active Directory, if you've got LDAP, if you've got SQL, various other Oracle, whatever it might be, all these repositories of different pieces of identity. Maybe the HR system's got some information, and then you've got a phone system with some other stuff, Active Directory, a database here, a database there, and all of a sudden you've got a mess. I've yet to come across a customer that can tell me they have a single central identity store. Even we don't have one internally at Microsoft, I can assure you of that. All right? It is mostly based around Active Directory, but there's multiple Active Directories, so there's not one. We also want to be able to use identity federation to be able to choose options around how authentication takes place and how we communicate between businesses, both external B2B and external B2C. Thinking about end users, we want to give them self-service, things like group management, things like self-service password reset, being able to do stuff without having to call in if you want to allow them to do that, and giving them a single sign-on. One identity, one password. Every customer that I've spoken to, and I spend time with end users as well, I say to them, how many usernames and passwords do you have? Do you want to know the running average that I have thus far in terms of every customer that I've spoken to, how many usernames and passwords the average user has in an average organization? Anyone want to guess? How many do you think's in your organization? 10? Three? 25. God, I don't want to work at your company. It's five. Of all the customers I've spoken to, and they say, hey, how many usernames and passwords do they have? My running tally thus far is on average, an average user and an average customer has five usernames and five passwords to remember. What we discover when we talk to those end users is that they would be quite happy to have a higher level of verification, validation in terms of a harder password, multi-factor authentication, whatever it might be. They will jump through more hoops for you if you give them one password. Okay? So that means that you can actually say, yep, the bar is higher to get in, but you've only got to remember one thing. They will take that to the bank every single time. You tell them they've got to remember five passwords, they'll write it down. They'll choose stupid passwords. They'll increment it. And you'll have to do all sorts of things to try and stop them doing that. So getting to the single identity is a good thing. And then from a data protection point of view, things like multi-factor authentication, things like device authentication, being able to use certificates and smart cards and so on, taking it from not just the user to the user plus something else, whatever that something else might be. Configuring single sign-on. We're making a lot of progress there. And then from a government's compliance and attestation point of view, being able to prove that what you say you've got is actually what you've got. Giving your managers the capability to say, my users need this level of access inside a box, and they can prove that that's the access they have. No more, no less, just that. Okay, within unification, we have the centralized identity and identity federation. Let's start there. So, how do we create this single, centralized, consistent corporate identity on-premise? Let's start with all of those directories and all of those repositories where identity can live. Maybe it's an HR system where you have a few bits of information, the name, the surname, and the employee ID. Maybe you've got a database, a line of business app. You've got Exchange, which has email addresses stored in Active Directory, but still part of Exchange. You've got LDAP. Maybe it's a phone system, whatever it might be. All of these identity pieces of information live all over the place. One of the goals of Identity Manager is to be able to bring those all together and then keep them in synchronization. Choose where you want your master to be, and get everything reading out of that, one way or another. Now, in some cases, you can't have all of your applications pointing to that one location. They might still need to point to another location, but at least keep the data in synchronization so that when a piece of information changes on the left and on the right, they're both the same. And so even if you've got databases reading off different locations, at least it's the same information. That gives the user the semblance of single sign-on. And it's something that I want to impress on you very deeply. Single sign-on means very different things for users than it does for IT. To the end user, single sign-on means I have one username and one password. I'm done. I've got single sign-on. IT might freak out and go, yes, but it's this and it's that, and we're doing sync and federation. Who cares? The user does not. Okay? Don't confuse them with all of the complexity. Give them one username and one password. Don't show them what's behind the curtain. They don't need to know. Okay? Behind the scene, absolutely. There could be spaghetti junction. There might be sync and federation and multiple databases, and your life is not easy because of all that mess. But give your users that one username and one password. That's all that they require. Now today, we bring that into Windows Server Active Directory and then via Windows Server Active Directory up to Azure Active Directory. And we're going to talk about that path in a little bit more detail in a sec. Now, when you want to go out to the cloud, who's syncing their Active Directory to Azure Active Directory today? About a third to a 40% maybe. Office 365 users, I'm assuming? Yeah, there you go. Okay, so in the past, we've only had one way of doing this, which is dir-sync. Okay? For the people with the complex environments, we've had to use FIM synchronization to get multiple directories and stuff up to Azure AD, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But at the moment, dir-sync was the only way of doing that. We introduced with dir-sync an option to synchronize passwords. Now, it's not actually passwords, it's password hashes, and to be absolutely technically valid, it's actually a hash of the password. So we take the password hash, we hash it again, we sync that up, and then we unhash it at the other end. We store those hashes in Active Directory. They both have the same algorithm. They can both read the hash and verify it, and you're all good. Of the people that are synchronizing to Azure AD, how many of you are synchronizing the password hash? Yeah, it's about right. What I've found, and statistically speaking, I'm not going to say this authoritatively, but my anecdotal evidence indicates that 50% of customers synchronize their password hash. However, it's the small 50%, not the big 50%. So whilst the customer base is about 50-50 split, the user base is nowhere near that. There's many reasons for that. People don't synchronize password hashes to Azure AD for one of two reasons. They're afraid or they can't. That's it. Why they're afraid could be many reasons. They just don't want to. They have a business reason. Maybe they just don't want to store it in the cloud, whatever the case may be. The can't is because there's some sort of regulatory compliance blocking that, and they can only store user credentials on a location that they have complete control over. So you can do that with the password hash. If you don't synchronize the password hash to Azure AD, then your only option is to do identity federation in one way or another using some sort of cloud brokery system. From our point of view, that's ADFS. There are other competitive products out there that do a very similar thing as well. When you do that, all authentication, instead of happening either in the cloud or on-prem, it will always go back on-prem. And that's something that some customers want. They deliberately don't synchronize passwords because they want Active Directory to always do every single authentication. That's what we showed in the keynote this morning. Go into the corporate login page. That was an ADFS login page. The authentication happening against Active Directory. A token was passed back. I presented that to Azure Active Directory, which respected it, and we're all good. These slides are available. If you guys are taking photos of it, they're available. So you can take photos. It's fine. But you can have the slides. So, moving forward, we have a new synchronization engine in town. This will eventually replace dir-sync. It's not going to do that in the immediate future, but the long-term strategy is very clear that Azure Active Directory Sync will become the one synchronized engine to rule them all. This allows us to synchronize on-premises direct to Azure Active Directory. So today, dir-sync does Active Directory to Azure Active Directory, one domain to one Azure AD tenant, single upward bound only. There are some write back for exchange, but ultimately that's what we have. Azure AD Sync is going to enable you to synchronize all of those disparate databases direct to Azure AD as well. The Azure AD tool is in preview today. It currently does multi-forest to Azure AD. We'll be bringing in the disparate databases over the next couple of months. We're looking to GA that tool in a couple of months' time. And eventually, it will do all of these different databases direct up to Azure AD. It will do all the write back from Azure AD down to Active Directory, users, groups, devices, and passwords. And it will also do the synchronization for Azure AD as well. So basically, that is the tool that is there. The coming soon is the fact that the tool is in preview, and we're adding more features to the preview over time. Look for a GA around about July, give or take. Now, thinking about identity federation, we have Active Directory Federation Services, ADFS, and we also have this new capability in Server 2012 R2 called the Web Application Proxy. The Web Application Proxy supersedes the ADFS proxy. Okay, so if you are running ADFS 2 and you are running the ADFS proxy, in 2012, the ADFS proxy doesn't exist anymore. It is the web application proxy. We took the ADFS proxy and we added reverse proxying over the top of that as well. So it not only proxies the ADFS authentication traffic, it does generic reverse proxying as well. And you'll see a lot more capability coming in the web application proxy over time. This allows us to do all of the authentication back against Windows Server AD in a claims-based way. And so a lot of people ask about things like workplace join and the difference between workplace join and domain join. Quite simply, workplace join is a modern domain join. It is lightweight and it is designed to be claims aware, as opposed to domain join, which is very much a 0-1 scenario, heavy in terms of policy and so on. Workplace join works across devices, iOS, Android, Windows, Windows Phone, and so on, and doesn't have that same heavy overload. As we go out, you can use ADFS to federate to external businesses. So if you have a B2B scenario, you can put a trust between the two ADFS, a federated trust between the two ADFS servers, and that allows you to authenticate between the companies. Obviously, going out to SaaS applications, if you are not doing password hash sync and you want to do single sign-on to SaaS applications, federation is your only way of doing that. You need to hit something like Azure AD and then be redirecting that back down. You can configure Azure Active Directory to either do sign-on in the cloud, or you can configure it for single sign-on back to AD as well. It is an option that you turn on when you configure the synchronization engine. So let's think about Office 365 and Windows Intune, which are both services that work in this hybrid model. The way that they work is there are three models. There's cloud-only identity. This is where you have no on-premise infrastructure, small to medium business, early startups, or some sort of projects and larger customers. You only have a cloud identity. When you bring in the synchronization model, this is where you can take the password hashes and sync them up and so on. You've connected on-prem up to Azure Active Directory. And then the federated model is you have the additional infrastructure for ADFS and you're passing all of the authentication back down. Now, the small, medium, large kind of model doesn't always hold. That's a very generic statement. You might look and say, hey, we're really big and we're using directory sync. That's perfectly okay. These are just generic statements. You'll note that O365 and Intune are sitting on top of Azure AD. In case you weren't aware, every single Office 365, Dynamics CRM, and Windows Intune user in the world is authenticating against Azure AD. It is the directory under all of those systems. Okay? And you know, the 2 billion auths per day is probably a little low. We're above that now. Okay, so every time someone synchronizes their mail, every time somebody authenticates against one of those three systems and so on around the world, it's Azure AD that's doing the work under the hood. So let's take a look at what that looks like when you do it. In the Azure, does that come up right? Yep. In the Azure portal, Active Directory is one of the nodes that you can see on the left-hand side. You can have multiple directories. You can create cloud-only directories, and that's a really good way of doing access for people that are cloud-based or are in external organizations. You can see here the multi-factor authentication as part of Azure AD there, and the rights management capabilities as well, which we'll talk about in some different sessions. Within Azure Active Directory, for those of you that are in the keynote and saw that, we saw some of this morning. The user list is where I can see all of those identities. You'll see some of them say, and I'll zoom in so that you can see it. That'll help. There we go. You can see there's some that say local Active Directory. Those are identities that live in the on-premises Active Directory that have been synchronized up. You can see some Windows Azure Active Directory accounts. Those are ones that have been created and only live in the cloud. And then you'll see some for Microsoft accounts. And so as we bring all of these different things together, we've got not only businesses operating identity within their own environment, but they've also got the federated links in the cloud and bringing in the consumer elements around Microsoft accounts as well. And you'll see us talking more about that later in the year as we talk about consumer identity and bringing that together. The groups that we talked about, and we're going to talk about self-service in a little bit. This is the synchronization from Active Directory. Again, that same kind of synchronization where we have groups that have been synchronized up from Active Directory, are in Active Directory, so we can manage and monitor them up there. We have cloud-based groups, of course, and we're going to talk about delegation, the ability for users to create and populate those groups on their own. So as a user, I could create a group, and then I can control who gets access to that group. That group can be used for access to an application, distribution, whatever the case may be. We talked a little bit about applications this morning as well, and that ability to provide single sign-on. Once you get to the point where you're using Active Directory, what are we up to? Let's see what the number is. I said just under 1,300. Let me add an application from the gallery. We are at, 1,444. I said nearly 1,300. We're up to 1,444. I should have checked that this morning. Damn, could have said 1,400. Right, there's 1,444 applications in the Azure Active Directory gallery. You can configure each of these applications so that your users get single sign-on using their Active Directory credentials. For SaaS applications that are genuinely federated, you can also do role-based access within that as well. For applications that are not federated, that don't have a federated model, you can configure the credentials that the users are going to access, or the users can pass them in. A good example of that is Twitter and Facebook, corporate social media accounts. Right? When someone knows a Twitter or a Facebook login, does it matter whether they work for your company or not? No, because as soon as they leave your company, they still know the credentials. That's a bad thing if they're really annoyed with you because they'll go and do something stupid, right? Post something on Twitter or Facebook and then there's an embarrassing thing that you've got to go clean up. When you configure single sign-on, they never know those credentials. You can cache in there the username for Twitter or the username for Facebook. They come along and click on the link. They present their Active Directory credentials and we go, are you allowed to use that app? If the answer is yes, we then proxy on the real credentials and sign into Twitter on their behalf. The user never knew what that username and password was. They leave the company, you disable their account. Guess what? No more access to the application. Okay. It's applications. From a configuration point of view, for those of you in the foundation session, you would have seen this a little bit, so I'm not going to go over too much. You have the ability to turn on password reset, so the ability for users to be able to say, oh, damn, I forgot my password. I'd like to reset it. You put them through the hoops that you want to verify their identity. Maybe it's a multi-factor authentication. Maybe it's just responding to an email to an alternate address. Maybe it's a phone call to their office phone, whatever it might be. You can be as challenging as you want in there. And then you can delegate down the ability to do group management. I'm going to show you what this looks like in the user section as well, whether you can create groups and whether you're allowed to then consume who goes in. The reports are pretty interesting, and we continue to build these reports out over time. One thing that I didn't click on in the keynote this morning, which some of you may have noticed, is when we look at that report, if I clicked on one, and my inability to use Zoom it this morning. What you should have seen is down the bottom that there is a password reset and a multi-factor authentication. So as an admin, when I see people on this report, which is saying these people managed to sign in from the country on the left and the country on the right within the next time, the far right number is how long it takes to travel between those companies, countries. So apparently there's one there, the first Al Flawney one. He apparently managed to log in from Austria and Australia, which I am not from, by the way, in 14 and a half hours, and it takes 15 hours to get there. So he couldn't have actually got from Austria to Australia in that time frame. So we flagged him to say, it's most likely that that didn't happen. Someone's stolen his identity and is using it around the world. Some of the other ones there, Canada to the UK in 2 hours and 45 minutes, and it takes at least 6 hours to fly. All right? Being able to track where users are logging on, what they're doing, and looking for patterns in behavior. One of the cool reports, and we'll see what data is actually in there, is the anomalous sign-in activity. We'll see whether I've got any data in there or not. Yes, we have. So let's look at one that's under my name. So we've got a few here. Signed in from an atypical location distant from the previous location. That's the geo one. But then there's also these other ones. Signed in from a concealed IP address. One of the things that I do, and by the way, we can't fake this data. I've actually had people in Microsoft around the world locking on with these accounts to make it look like we're doing bad things. This is coming out of real data, okay? So you can't actually fake this. One of the things we do is track IP addresses, and one of the ways of triggering this to see how it goes is to use networks that proxy your traffic out and do anonymizing. So if your users start doing things like that, they're going to turn up on these reports. The geo-distant locations we've looked at and so on. One of the other things that we track, if I go and have a look at my own account, is the devices that I'm logging on from as we wait for that to update. So you can see here, we're not only tracking the user identity and who they are and what they have access to, but I can also see which devices they are logging on from. This is one of the ways that we do the anomalous log on. If I log on every day from, say, my Windows 8 PC, and then all of a sudden I log on from an Android at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's pretty unlikely that I'm suddenly going to do that. That would be an odd thing to happen, right? It's probably someone doing something bad, so we track that kind of thing. Yes, there was a question.
So this is Azure. We're only Office 365, so I don't have Azure right now. I talked with the AD guy, the Office 365 guys in the last session, and they said they're trying to integrate this into 365. But I thought I'd ask you the same thing. So I can't see this if I don't have Azure, some type of Azure service right now.
Yeah, so let me, it's a licensing question, so yeah, I'll answer it. So all of this information when you are an Office 365 subscriber is being trapped. You just don't see these reports. The Azure Active Directory Premium licensing SKU is what gives you access to the reports, okay? That's a licensing question. I'm purely talking about technology, but yes, this is not the free Azure Active Directory that's available. It is the premium capabilities. Absolutely, that is a true statement. All right, let's go back, and I'll come back to the user experiences in just a minute. Okay. So, we've set up our identity, we're giving users a nice single logon, we're synchronizing to the cloud, all this federation stuff works, that's great. What do they get out of it? Let's think about that. Self-service experiences on-premises first. Group management, password reset, those kinds of things, being able to do dynamic group memberships. There are still a lot of companies that need to do on-premises Active Directory kind of stuff, right? Adding users into groups, delegation, calculating group membership for role-based access based on role and type and location and things like that. Being able to edit your own details as a user. Being able to say, hey, my phone number's changed, and not having to call the help desk or something to be able to just change that address and so on. Resetting passwords. This is one of the biggest costs to IT, is when users forget their password and they have to make a call and someone has to go reset it and verify the identity and so on. Being able to move this to a self-service model where you can have systems in place that will verify the user's identity and then challenge them and then be able to reset the user on their reset their password on their behalf, I should say. Onboarding new users. Who here has an automated process when a new user starts that some manager can go fill in a form and hit go and instantly their new employee has everything they need? Anybody? Eight hands I'm picking out of a room of a few hundred. That's a lot of cost and a lot of extra effort that goes in to do those kinds of things. And I would hazard a guess that outside of the eight people that put their hand up with an automated process, everyone else in this room spends a lot of time doing it, and I bet you don't get it right first time. It happens. Not in the right group, not in the right security locations, can't access this, can't access that. It's a very expensive process when you're talking about identity. And as you get from being just on-premises to being in the hybrid mode and then cloud only, that only expands and goes out even more. Okay, so you're adding more to the pool. You want to get that one right. And then being able to use policy and workflow-driven scenarios. Say a new user starts and they need access to a site, but I'm not the owner of it. You want to be able to route that request to the owner to say, hey, Bob started, he's in my team, and you need to approve his membership. Whether you want that to have automatically or not will depend on the group, but what if it's something that's sensitive or financial or whatever the case may be? You want to make sure that they are able to have the appropriate approvals given in an automated way. Now, let's go to the cloud. We've done all that on-prem, which is awesome. What happens in the cloud? We move from Identity Manager to Azure Active Directory in terms of product, which is a good start. We still have self-service password change and reset, and with the new synchronization technologies, that will write back down on-prem as well. No infrastructure to install. User goes to Azure AD. We challenge them. We do a multi-factor authentication, whatever boxes we just ticked in that last demo. They're challenged, we reset their password in Azure AD, and we write that back down to on-prem. We've now synchronized the passwords backwards and forwards, no infrastructure to deploy, and you've enabled self-service password reset. Fantastic step number one. Users can go to the web portal, and I'll show you this in the user experience, and update their details, okay, and be able to write that back. My clicker's not working. There it is. Managing group access, again, just like we can do on-prem, but no infrastructure to deploy. It's one of the big changes in identity as we move from on-prem out to the cloud, is the fact that there's no infrastructure to deploy to make all these things happen. All these self-service capabilities are checkboxes that you turn on. You shouldn't be scared by that. That's a good thing. All right? Don't be installing servers and configuring stuff. Check boxes and add value, and then work on more interesting things. And then SaaS applications we just talked about, and then, of course, leveraging Active Directory. There's not many customers that I've interacted with that either don't run AD or are not looking to leverage that and connect up to the cloud. There's not many cloud-only customers. New customers, greenfield customers, and we have some large customers using Azure AD in very isolated, project-orientated. The vast majority a hybrid, which is why we have this topic about creating, taking Active Directory and extending it up. Nice, tidy pool on-prem, synchronized up to the cloud, all connected together, leveraging cloud services, writing back down. Beautiful story. Now, single sign-on. Let's think about how this is actually going to work. Leveraging your investments. You have all of this stuff that's on cloud, and we just talked about the synchronization engines. Very strange. SQL, web services, PowerShell, these line of business applications, even file servers. Azure Active Directory, using synchronization or federation, whichever is the right answer for you. There is a reason why we offer choice. We don't say you must sync or you must pass the hash or you must use federation. Choose the model that is correct for you, based on your company type, based on your geographic location, based on your regulatory compliance, whatever the story might be. Okay? Choose the one that works best. From there, you've now connected out. You've got access to the third-party apps, which we showed you. We've got access to Office and Intune and other applications that are based on Azure Active Directory or are configured in the gallery or are federated as well. Again, Office 365, Intune, I'm just using those as examples. With the cloud identity, you stop being at Azure Active Directory. So when you're in the cloud, you're Azure AD only. As soon as you bring Directory Sync into that, authentication is still happening either at Azure AD or on-prem. And then when you bring Federation in, your authentication is only on the right. Okay, so going through that again. When you're cloud only, you're in Azure AD only. When you're in sync mode with password hash, authentication can happen at either end. A cloud app will hit Azure AD and auth there. An on-prem app will hit Active Directory and stop there. When you're in federated mode, you are only authenticating against Active Directory. It's one of the reasons why people do it. So what does that look like from a user point of view? Okay, is that coming up all right? All right. So here we are on an iPad, and it's quite good to do some demos on the iPad because it shows, A, that we're cross-plat, but B, the experience is consistent across platforms. We're talking about identity. It should be common. Now, on some devices, more than others, you get more prompts and so on, but the experience for the user is going from an identity point of view is going to be very similar. So we're going to start, and I'm going to take you through a process of we're going to access an on-premise app. We're then going to access Office 365 and stretch out to the cloud, and we're going to go the next step again, which is going out to a SaaS application. Now, I have my I was trying to access a SharePoint site there, and I have Workplace Join configured, and I have a rule that says that I need to be able to I require device registration. So we're going to go ahead and do a workplace join. I think most of you have probably seen this over a period of time. If you haven't, I will still explain what goes on. We have multi-factor authentication configured as part of workplace join. We can do multi-factor authentication on a per application basis, which in terms of ADFS means per relying party. I'm using the mobile app because I don't trust the cell phone reception in here. I was able to verify on using the mobile app. That has now gone through. Workplace join actually does three things. It is a feature of ADFS 2012 R2, and it installs a certificate onto the device, which we do by installing a profile using the Apple APIs. So we put a certificate onto the device, and we create a record in Active Directory. Okay, it's a record, not an object. The difference is one's a security principle, one is not. The record contains the thumbprint of this certificate, the user ID, and a whole bunch of information about this device. Okay, so we have now installed the certificate on there. Next time I go through, you can see it's prompted me for the certificate. It is there. And I will now be passed through. And you will see SharePoint come up. Excuse me. Now, the reason I've added that one in is not just from a demo point of view that I'm going on-prem, cloud, and then out to SaaS app. One of the things, one of the benefits of workplace join is that by doing a workplace join, we change the token value that we store user credentials in. Okay? So by default, without workplace join, the token lifespan is browser-based. Whilst you have the browser tab or browser session open, your token is valid. And if you try and sign on to another application and you've got the browser open, it'll represent that token and you'll get through. If you close the browser, the token is dead and you'll have to re-authenticate again. One of the things that Workplace Join does is give you an extended period of time. Okay, we take it from being browser-based in terms of session to 7 days. So the token has a long-lasting effect. What that means is that whilst I'm workplace joined, I won't have to re-authenticate if I go back to the site again. That's a good thing or a bad thing depending on which company you are. I've had some customers go, hell no, we're not doing that. And we've had other customers say, thank you for doing that. So whatever works for you is good, all right? Everybody's different when it comes to security. So we've got access to SharePoint and we're now signed on. Let's go out one more step and go to Office 365. I'm taken to Office 365. I'm not going to install Office. I'm going to sign in. I should probably rotate this, actually. It would be a lot easier. It's going to look better. That look okay? All right. And let me find the at symbol. I think I went to did I go to .net or .com? Let me see. Soon find out. Contos demo. That's not going to work. Contos. Oh. Let's try that one. Okay. Now you'll notice it didn't take me to ADFS. It prompted me for the certificate. Just quietly, that's an Apple bug. It's not supposed to prompt for that, but it does. We're trying to get them to fix it. Now, that's the last thing that I'll have to do. No password. Took me straight through to Office 365. Okay. The reason is I was workplace joined and I'd already authenticated against SharePoint. I had a token. When Office 365 went to ADFS, which it actually did really quickly, you just don't see it, is it went to ADFS and said, hey, I've got adhall@contosodemo.net, and it went, yep, you've got a token, it's valid, have at it. Straight through, no password sign on. Okay. If I hadn't had been workplace joined, I would have been taken to ADFS and needed to enter my credentials again. Again, this is a choice that you need to make. How often do you want your users to authenticate versus the easy life you want to give them, and how do you balance that security of easy access with access control? Is the token lifespan configurable? With Workplace Join, it's 7 days today. You can configure the token lifespan, but the Workplace Join signing of that token is 7 days. It is not configurable right now. Feedback taken.
Sorry.
Yes, the question is, can you revoke the token? The answer is yes, by either removing the device from Workplace Join, or you can actually go into Active Directory and disable the record. The next time the device comes in, we check the token with the record and go, hey, your record is disabled. Goodbye. And it actually just says access denied. Yeah. Okay, so I'm now through to Office 365. But I want to take that one more step further. I want to go to myapps.microsoft.com. This is the SaaS application portal where I didn't show it this morning, where I can get access to my SaaS applications logged on. Now, assuming I typed that URL right and assuming the Wi-Fi is holding up, you'll see I'm going to account.active directory. Here we go. And you'll note that I did not enter a password there. I was automatically taken through, and I can see the SaaS applications that are available. This is just a random selection that I set up from that selection of 1,400 applications. And I can follow that all the way through. Things like Twitter, for example. You know, I believe I've configured this one. No, I haven't. Demo failure. The ability for us to pre-populate those and configure them. So as a user, I got on-premises, I got to Office 365, and I got the SaaS applications all with one sign-in. Okay, that single sign-on. Now, we talked about groups. I want to go to back to this machine. And close that in private. I need a new one in private. One moment. If I could type Microsoft. All right, I'm going to log on with my .NET account, which is different to the one I was using over there. This is the one that I used in the keynote this morning. Okay. Now, here's a slightly different view, and I came to this one because on the iPad, there was only applications and profile, and here you see groups and approvals. The reason is in the environment that I was logged into here, group management is not enabled. In this environment, it is. What that means is I can click on groups, and I can not only see, and this, there we go, I can not only see the groups that exist, and you saw the list earlier on of the groups that were synchronized up and back, but I can also create new groups because I've been delegated the rights. So I can, what are we in, PCIT B313, I think it was, demo group. And I can say that this group requires owner approval and create that. So I've now created a group called PCIT B313. If another user was to come along, and I apologize, I'm going to need to jump backwards and forwards between browser sessions here. I should have installed another browser. And if I go in as, say, Alf, who we were looking at before, who had turned up on the dodgy record, and sign. See if I can remember the password. Yes. All right, and take a look at groups. Oh, I'm not set up. I didn't hear that, sorry. I've switched users. I've gone to a completely different environment, and I'm using a different. I'm using three different user accounts. I'm getting prompted for the password because I'm A, I'm in private, and B, I'm using three different accounts. That one's not configured. All right, I'm going to skip that one. What I can do is that user is that I can request access to the group. And in fact, if I go to my 365 account and sign in with the one that I used in the keynote this morning, which I am in an in-private browser, so I'm going to get logged in here, just like I did this morning. You will see in the inbox this email where Al has already requested access to my direct reports security group, and I can act on that request. So I can follow that. It will take me through to the approvals, and I must have already approved it in the background. Obviously, that's an old mail. But that's the workflow, okay? So as a user, I create a group. Another user wants to be a member of my group. I get through a workflow. I can approve that. It's an easy example of how easy it is to set up in the cloud versus needing to do it on-prem with heavy infrastructural overload required. There was a question just there. Okay, so these groups are a combination of what has been synchronized from Active Directory up and cloud that are there. If I had write-back enabled in terms of synchronization and I made a change in the cloud, it would synchronize back down as well. That is not enabled in the preview today. The answer is going to be yes. I can't do it here because I don't have the internal build of the preview which has write-back. Once we have group write-back, the answer will be yes. Yes. Yep. Once we have group write-back, basically anything on-prem and anything in the cloud become bi-directional. Okay? That's the goal. That's what we want. That's what we need to get to for write-back to be valid. Absolutely. Yep. Oh, there's one more question down the back.
So in a hybrid exchange environment where you have the I think it's a hybrid exchange server to be able to sync your on-prem exchange.
Yes,
users.
There are attributes from Office 365 that come back down just that DirSync does just for exchange. Yes.
Correct. So Yep. Is that, do you have to enable a write back for that? Because I can see an issue where someone who's giving admin access to the Azure Active Directory, Yep. But not admin access to your on-prem, Yep. They create a group or add themselves to a group. Yeah. And then it writes back.
Exchange is that great, you know, outcome that breaks the rule. Exchange is different. DirSync today already does exchange write back for hybrid because there are attributes in Office 365 that must exist in your local Active Directory in order for mailboxes to be able to talk to each other. Exchange is a bad example here because we already cater for it in a very special way. So I'm talking about things that are outside of Exchange. Exchange is that one that we've already got that problem and we've already solved it. We're talking about enabling other just standard security and distribution groups. Yeah, it's a good question though. Anyone who's in hybrid exchange mode already has some of this going on today. Absolutely. Yep. So the question, or the point being made was, we don't know where groups are being permissioned today in terms of where they're being used. Absolutely. There is, if you don't know what your groups are being used for, then you have a challenge that I can't answer for you, which is getting that under control and doing the research to work out where exactly are those groups being used and what happens when the group membership changes and who needs to approve that. Absolutely, there is a huge piece of work in some companies to figure that mess out. I don't underestimate how hard that is, absolutely. One of the things that we work on things like Identity Manager is that reverse correlation around if we take a group and know who's in it, but where else is it permission? That is a big piece of work to figure out. Could be on file servers, it could be in SharePoint, it could be in Exchange, it could be in a line of business app. Absolutely, I agree completely. If you don't know that, I'm sorry for your world of pain. Okay, last section, counting down time. Protection, authentication and access control, and governance and compliance. What does this look like in a hybrid identity world? Let's start with the investments that we made in Active Directory 2012. So let's go back a couple of years, and I've been doing Windows Server for a little while now. One of the things we did with Active Directory and as a precursor to all of this was really support virtualization and scale. And taking Active Directory away from being a singular physical box to being able to be rolled out quickly through virtualization, through things like domain controller cloning, and so on. Being able to manage Active Directory, you think about a lot of these things we've been talking about, how do you make those updates? PowerShell is the answer. What was the question? Everything you do in Windows Server 2012 and above is PowerShell orientated, whether you're aware of it or not. And so knowing that and being able to leverage that for automation and streamlining those processes is really critical. Leveraging Azure Infrastructure Services, so running domain controllers virtually up in IaaS. One of the reasons why a lot of customers do that is the proximity of an IaaS domain controller to Azure AD. If you're running a domain controller on IaaS, it is going to be faster talking to Azure AD than it is from your premises simply because of where we run it. That makes sense. So a lot of customers are setting domain controllers up in IaaS for that very reason and putting DirSync up there too. Integrating with Azure Active Directory, and then Office and Windows activation. In case you weren't aware and haven't seen that one before, by virtue of being a member of the domain, you can activate Windows and Office. Okay, so you can move away from KMS and various other things. You can put the keys into AD, and by joining the domain, you automatically activate Windows and the Office version that's running on it as well, just FYI. Now, take a look at Azure Active Directory. We've been talking a lot about this, and in some ways, this is kind of like the odd thing to talk about at the end. We should have talked about it about front, but it kind of fits in the flow, is Azure Active Directory is a comprehensive cloud-based IAM solution. That is what we are building. Okay. When you bring in all of those different attributes and so on, we start to build out a very powerful solution where you can control access to stuff. Applications is the focus right now because that's the biggest pain for most of our customers. The SaaS application situation, that survey that I mentioned in the keynote this morning was not a small survey. It was several thousand customers with many users within each of those customers. And they were not small customers, and they weren't medium customers either. They were decent-sized customers. It was a good install base. And over 80% of them, it was like 83% of them, I think, was the number, something like that. Incredible number. We're saying, yeah, we've been told not to use it, but we use it anyway. I mean, that's what's happening. If you don't know your users are doing it, the answer is yes. Multi-factor authentication. We had the Phone Factor acquisition a couple of years ago, and that's now Windows Azure multi-factor authentication. We're embedding that everywhere. Office 365 users get access to it, the ability to do MFA through ADFS integration, and it is showing up in things like password reset, and it's everywhere. It's kind of ubiquitous. You really want that higher level of validation. MFA is a nice, easy way to do it. Phone calls, text messages, mobile applications, all those kinds of things. SaaS applications, hundreds, yes, we're into the thousands now. I need to update the slide. We've looked at that. And then from a global point of view, being able to track what's going on with this machine learning-based reports. And it's pretty quick. As I was building out these demos and populating that data by doing interesting things around the world to get onto those reports, It turns up within a very short space of time, and it tells you when the report was last populated, so you know exactly what it's up to date. And it really is not quite real time, but it's not far behind. Multi-factor authentication. I'm sure that a lot of you in the audience know what MFA is and how it works, but just for the record and for completeness in the slides, as a user's accessing the information, the application or some sort of repository goes up to the MFA service and says, hey, go challenge the user and verify who they are. On the assumption that that's all okay, the response is taken back down to the application. It gets an appropriate verification from the MFA service saying, yep, good to go, and the user is allowed to get through. I'm skipping over some of the details on this. We've got a whole week with dedicated sessions on each of these, so I don't want to steal any of that stuff, and I'm sure you'd like to know in a lot more detail. Rights management. Who's ever used rights management? Who's using Azure rights management? None. Awesome. First time I've had no hands up for that one. That's great. Okay. Azure rights management is the cloud-based version of rights management. One of the biggest blockers to on-premises AD RMS, well, there's two actually. The first one is the challenges involved in actually deploying it. And the second one is that it's only Windows and Office. Azure Active Directory is across all the major platforms, can be embedded in any mobile application, of which we have samples out there now. And so it allows you to protect any document on any platform between any two people. That is the promise, and that is what we do today. I beg your pardon? Does it work on Mac? iOS, Android, Windows, Windows Phone. I need to check on Mac. The Mac OS client was a work in progress. I would need to check with Dan on exactly where that one's at. I do know that it's coming. I think it's just basically based on market share. iOS was our primary target as far as Apple's concerned, and Mac OS is very small compared to iOS. So there's just not a huge demand for it, quite frankly. But iOS is definitely covered. Interaction with SharePoint and Exchange. You can leverage the Azure RMS service to protect on-premises file servers, SharePoint servers, and Exchange servers through the use of a connector. Click. So what this means is you install a very lightweight connector on-premise, and those on-premises applications talk to that connector. They actually see that connector as an AD RMS server. They believe they're talking to AD RMS. What happens is behind the scenes, the connector proxies that out, talks to the cloud service, and returns everything back. Okay? There's a lot of detail in Enrique's sessions and RMS about exactly how that works, but it's a very easy way to get going. It allows you to work across multiple platforms and share between external people as well. And there we go. Stole my own thunder. And then Office and Windows, of course, it still integrates with Windows. You can still right-click, you can share protected, you can share within, and there are like ribbon toolbar plugins and things like that. So there's still that integration there as well. From a governance and compliance point of view, when you're protecting data, there's a few things going on here. Role-based access, managing users based on who they are. And what you see here is you'll notice all the slides on the way through talk about Identity Manager and Azure Active Directory in two separate kind of ways. That's because today, Identity Manager is our on-premise scenario. Azure Active Directory is the cloud-based, and we're connecting the two. You'll see us merge and blend those over a period of time. But today, and for the near term, those are going to be our two kind of go-to-markets. Identity Manager on-prem, Azure Active Directory in the cloud with a hybrid connection in between. Segregation of duties. What this means is I shouldn't be able to do two things that are in conflict with each other. Really easy example. I shouldn't be able to raise a purchase order and approve it. That'd be kind of bad, right? I can spend the company's money without any kind of validation. So basically, segregation of duties means in the system, if I create a PO, I also cannot approve it. Someone else must do it. Okay, that's what segregation of duties means. Incompatible permissions and roles. Self-service, we've talked about that on the way through already. Attestation, proving that what you say is true is actually true. And then being able to demonstrate that from a permissions point of view for the ability to do regulatory compliance, Sarbanes-Oxley, HIPAA, all those kinds of cool things. All right. From a workload point of view, talking about SharePoint, the example that we saw in the demo where we had SharePoint requiring the workplace join, SharePoint requiring the workplace join requiring the MFA. Here's what actually happened. I was a user and I was on an iPad. We were talking externally to the web application proxy, so that was our first hit to the external world, from the external world to the internal world, was the web application proxy. That's our external facing proxy. That went through to ADFS, which presented me with the login page. I entered my credentials. It talked to SharePoint. SharePoint said, hey, I've got a claim. Well, actually, the reliant party said, hey, I've got a claim. Need to be workplace joined. Access denied. ADFS presented the error message up. I did the workplace join. I went back to SharePoint, said, I want to access SharePoint. It said, yes, you now meet the claims, and then I was passed through. The multi-factor authentication was done by ADFS on workplace join's behalf. Went up to the MFA service, called me. I verified myself. It gave me the token to get through, and the workplace join completed. That's what actually happened in that process. So I want to talk a little bit about how we actually did that. This is my ADFS server. I'm going to show you two things in here, actually, a little sneak peek of something as well. Who was in the foundation session that I did this morning? How many? Okay, I apologize. I'm going to show you a couple of things that you saw earlier. I'm going to apologize up front for the 20% of people that just put their hand up. So, two things I want to show you. One is, how did we configure all of that? And I apologize for this. I do have Zoom it. This is still actually configured from this morning, so I'll just quickly undo what I did. Okay, first let's talk about multi-factor authentication. Multi-factor authentication is configured in ADFS now at two levels, the global level and the per-relying party level. Okay, the multi-factor authentication provider in in ADFS is a plugin model. We have built in certificate authentication, which you can see there, out of the box. So to do smart card authentication, you do nothing else other than check the box, and you're done. It's out of box functional. You can then install the Windows Azure multi-factor authentication provider, which will enable you to use that service. This is a plug-in model. If you're using another multi-factor authentication provider, like RSA or SecureID or whoever the case may be, they can build a plug-in for this. Okay, and then when you hit here, we will call their service. We are working with a couple, and we're going to show them this week, and we're working with as many of them as we can. You'll notice there are three ways that I can enforce a multi-factor authentication. The top one that you see is requiring group users and groups. Where did that go? I hit escape twice, my apologies. The top one. And so I can add, say, domain users to this list. And what that means is now any relying party where you are a member of domain users will require a multi-factor authentication. You can also do it in terms of whether the device is registered or not. So here's an option. You can register your device and bypass the multi-factor authentication. Or you can not register your device and get a multi-factor authentication every time. Give your users choice. They'll soon get sick of doing multi-factor authentication every time and register your device. The other option you've got is extranet versus intranet down the bottom. The ability to say, oh, you're inside the corporate network? You're fine. Carry on. Oh, you're outside? Yeah, I'm going to multi-factor authentication you. Okay. Thinking about not only the user, but where they are and the context that by which they are connecting, the device they're on and the application. So that's at the global level. At a per application level, you can do the same thing. And so exactly the same interface, but this is done at the application level. So you can choose, set it at the global level or set it at the application level. In ADFS, a relying party is equivalent to an application. Okay, I'm just simplifying the language down. Same policies apply. Now, the requiring device registration. You can do this using the claims language. If you know how to write that, have at it. I do not know how to do it, so I use the wizard. I'm a GUI guy. Right, all we have to do is create an incoming claim. I'm going to say require device reg. And what you will see is that there is a claim called is registered user. When you do this in claims language, there's no spaces. It's just is registered user. Is registered user. That is the claim that you can present when you want to enforce device registration. When you set that value to true, that is all you have to do. And now, every time someone tries to access that application, it is going to prompt and say, you must be registered. That is it. That is as hard as it is to enforce device registration. That's it. I have a lot of conversations with people due to certain competitors of ours saying ADFS is hard. Bollocks. That's how hard it is. It's easy to install. I can give you 3 PowerShell commandlets that will configure, deploy ADFS and configure it like that. I can give you 1 more PowerShell commandlet that will configure all the rules for you. It is not hard anymore. It used to be. I'll give you that. It is not anymore. Okay? ADFS is not hard, it is not cumbersome, and it is damn easy to enforce claims and damn easy to enforce MFA. Now, you can get in some very, very complex situations. I'm not going to say that. But that is not about ADFS. That is about identity federation in general, okay, and the rules that are there. And it does not matter which product you do in order to do that. All right, down to my last few minutes. Let me just undo what I just did, because otherwise I'm going to break something. More. No, I did that one. That's good. Oh, I did it to Office 365 this morning, didn't I? Here we go. So one of the most common questions I get, actually, is the most common claims rule that I respond to via mail from customers is, I want any user who is accessing Office 365 from external to either be registered or have a multi-factor authentication. And it's great. I've just got a text file, and I send the claim to them and say, there you go. Done. It's that easy. Tick the boxes. Or use this PowerShell. Now, the last thing I want to show you, for those of you that were in the foundation session this morning, I again apologize. I'm going to show something that I showed this morning. Deploying the synchronization and federation capabilities to connect on-premises AD to Azure AD. Synchronization and federation, 2 things that can be time-consuming, take some thought, and have been hard in the past, but we're continuing to make these things even easier. This is the Azure Active Directory Connect tool, I should say that correctly. What this does is deploys, based on the answers you give it, the correct synchronization engine and the federation capabilities, including the relying parties, all configured for you based on what you say in the wizard. Okay, and I'll show you what this wizard is going to look like. This is going into preview in June. License agreement, an obvious one. It's going to check the local computer. It needs the .NET framework and a couple of other things. It's going to install those. And it's admin at Contoso. I believe that's correct. We'll soon find out, right? No, it's not right. Let me cheat. Admin at Contoso. Oh, on Microsoft.com. I thought I typed that. In which case, I typed this wrong. Oh. Yay, identity works. Okay, first option you get, Express or Custom. If you choose Express, it will install DirSync, it will configure synchronization, and it will include the password hash. Done. Deploys it and configures it for you. You're done. Moving on. Most people are complex. Let's go with that. Multiple forest built into the wizard. It will go looking for your forests, and it will ask you to authenticate against each one. I can add each forest. I have two forests here, contoso.com and contoso.co.uk. Synchronization options around which attributes I want to actually synchronize. The hybrid exchange deployment that we talked about earlier, check the box, and it will set all that up for you as well. Whether I want to do federation, I do. So I'm going to deploy ADFS and everything to server01.contoso.com. It will want the certificate to be able to do all of that. That is fine. I have it here. It will ask me which of the Azure domains I want to federate to, whether I want to deploy the web application proxy. I do. And that's it. That is the wizard. Answer some questions, and it will now go off and do the work for you. There's no excuse. It's easy. Not easy. It's not easy. It's less complex. Shouldn't say easy when you're talking about someone doing work, right? It's not easy. You've still got to know what to do and know what options to check. We're taking away the overload of having to manually go download the right bits and install them and configure them, and making it so that you can answer the questions and then be able to have the right things deployed in the right way. In a proof of concept lab, it'll give you all the information so you know how to do it properly. In production, it will deploy a single instance of everything to best practices. Okay? Get you going fast, to get you up and running quickly so that you can focus on the more interesting things like turning all that cool stuff on. Was there a question there? Yeah. The version that I'm running here is only to one subscription, but eventually we'll continue to take that feedback. If we get the feedback during the preview that people want to be able to sync to multiple, then we might look at putting it in the wizard. Today, that would be something that you do. This will get you to the first one, and then you can use Azure AD Sync to go to multiple tenants. But yes, that's good feedback. I'll take that one back. Cool. All right, let me just close out. I know it's the end of the day. It's 5:55, and you survived the first day of Tech Ed. All right. Review. We looked at the unification. We've got identity in the cloud and on-premise. We're syncing. We're federating. We're talking to external users. We're sharing information. We've got users with self-service. We've got users with single sign-on. We're protecting data. We didn't really take much of a look at Azure RMS, but take a look at that. Take a look at how you configure all of this. There's sessions all week. I wanted this session on Monday to set out. There's deep sessions on all of this. There's hands-on labs available. There's trials available. Go and play. Go and talk to people. There are a load of sessions here with related content. These are in the slides. The slides are now available as part of the session, so please, you can grab these slides. I've got speaker notes in most of it, so you can know what it was I said. The session should be available online. And then some extra resources and the hands-on labs that are available when you go home and the quick links that will take you straight there. Okay, so a lot of this is available online. There's some stuff. Please complete your evaluation. We do want to hear how to make the sessions better. We improve the sessions and so on based on feedback. If you like bits, say so. If you don't like bits, tell me what information you're expecting to see. If it was too deep, if it was not deep enough. It's always kind of hard with the 200 and 300 levels and working out who thinks what about that and so on. So please give us the feedback so we can balance it. Have a great week. I'm going to be here until Thursday afternoon, so if you need to see me, I will be around. Thank you very much for spending the time. And please have a safe and enjoyable ticket.